Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. A very special woman walks the streets and lobbies governments in her mission to save hundreds and thousands of enslaved and exploited women. Father Jim explains why one and one isn't two. It's infinity. In one of his messages for the World Day for Migrants and Refugees, Pope Benedict XVI reminded us that immigration and exploitation are acquiring an ever more feminine face, and that it is urgent for us to know how to read the signs of the times. The feminization of the phenomenon leads, the Pope pointed out, in some cases, to exploitation and slavery, in which there are women and girls destined to be exploited in the field of work, almost like slaves, and not really, also in the sexual industry. Well, there is a prophetic role for faith-based organisations in addressing this modern-day form of slavery, commonly known as sex trafficking. And right close to my office here at Vatican Radio are the headquarters of Sister Eugenia Bonetti, herself a missionary, a committed activist, and the very person responsible for the anti-trafficking initiatives of the USMI, a coalition of 627 women's congregations, with a special office created to address the issue of immigrant women who have become victims of human trafficking. I was lucky to catch Sister Eugenia here in Rome, in between conferences, lectures, and the work she does with political, social, and religious institutions, persuading them to support her cause.
I am a consolata missionary sister. Originally, I'm from Milan. I was only 14 in 1953 when I read on a missionary magazine that a consolata missionary sister was killed in Kenya. It was the time of independence, and so there was a lot of disturbances. And this sister, who spent 32 years of her missionary life in Kenya, offered her life completely, and she was killed. And at a certain moment, I really felt the desire and the inspiration of saying, she is no longer alive, she can no longer work for people. She has decided to do it for so many years, so that place is vacant. I want to take it up.
Yes, the story of that missionary sister made such a deep impression on the 14-year-old girl. She did what she could to find out about the Sisters of the Consolata, and 6 years later, she entered their congregation in Turin.
So when I entered the congregation in 1959, after 6 months since I read that story of that sister who passed away, a second sister Eugenia, because that first sister was called Sister Eugenia Cavallo, a second sister Eugenia also passed away on the same day at a distance of 6 years. She was very young, she had a cancer. So when I read, as soon as I arrived in Turin to enter the congregation, I read the story that even the second one passed away. I said, I will be the third one.
My next question came naturally. Is Eugenia your baptismal name?
No, my baptism name is Maddalena, Mary Magdalene. And this, yes, very fitting, exactly, because names are very significant. Yeah, but even the name that was given in religion, for me it's very significant because I followed the footsteps of the first sister Eugenia that was killed. And so I was also lucky because after my formation, my preparation, I left for Kenya. I was sent to work in Kenya where that the first sister Eugenia was killed. And I continued to work for 24 years. I was so happy, so well integrated in that environment with women especially. You know, just to be with women, helping them to overcome their poverty and also helping them to become aware of their role, of their dignity, of their life, of their strength, their richness.
So Sister Eugenia spent 24 years in a mission in a beautiful rural area of Kenya. She was a religious education advisor and was fully involved in African life.
And I was so happy to be there. But all at once, something happened that I was called to come back to Italy and to become a missionary in my own country, which was not so easy for me. That was my world, was my family. I was so happy. But now, with obedience, I have to come back because I was asked to work in a Caritas drop-in center in Turin for immigrant women that early 90s started to come from different countries looking for a better way of life.
Sister Eugenia told me that in Italy in the first years of the 1990s, it was mostly Nigerian and Polish women who were trafficked and forced into prostitution, most of them between 14 and 18 years of age. The numbers were growing steadily, and there was an urgent need for help.
But for me at the beginning, it was not easy. I could not understand why, because I had the impression that I betrayed my missionary vocation. I thought at that time that to be a missionary was only to be in Africa. And so now to find myself in the big city of Turin, it was so difficult for me to understand to be there. Even though I accepted to be there, my mind was not there. I was always in Africa until one day. One day something happened in my life at that drop-in center. I met for the first time an African woman, a Nigerian woman, that came to ask for help. Maria, for me, has really become, you know, a very important person, a symbol that helped me to change my life.
Maria, Sister Eugenia told me, was sick. A doctor had sent her to the drop-in centre in search of help. But she was the one who really helped Sister Eugenia come to terms with her new mission.
I used to see these women along the street, and I was annoyed with them, because I said, what are these African women doing in Italy, standing on the street, looking for clients? I had no idea of what was behind it. And so I became also annoyed, like many other people, because I thought that they were there because they wanted to be there. But Maria changed my mind. Maria helped me to understand that they were there because they had no other choice. They were forced to be there, that there was all kind of different organization, criminal organization. They used their poverty. They used their situation in order to get money and in order to provide a special kind of service for the ones asking for it, because they were ready to pay for it. So now, when I met Maria, and it took some time for me before realizing, you know, the whole situation, but Maria became my catechist. She became my teacher. We helped her to regain health, but she helped me to regain my vocation.
So Sister Eugenia readjusted her vision of missionary life, no longer in Africa, but in her own country.
I was in crisis, in deep crisis, because I didn't know what to do before. But she helped me to understand the mission was no longer geography, but mission was where these women, in a very special women that, you know, I was so happy to live with them in Africa, and now these women were in my own country.
Yeah,
they were the same women in my own country, but in such a different trauma, drama, terrible situation, exploitation, humiliation.
In Sister Eugenia's own words, she became a missionary of the night and of the street.
I move around all over the world nowadays just to highlight the problem of these women, to become the voice of these women, because they have no voice, they have no rights, they are just humiliated, they are just frustrated, they are just treated like rotten people because they are all broken.
Sister Eugenia was careful to point out that nowadays there are different forms of human trafficking for different reasons and different purposes. But she and her sisters work with those who are exploited sexually.
Being sisters, so much concern for the well-being of women. We know the terrible drama these women live, especially when they are forced to give up the most precious gift. That is their femininity, their motherhood, their youth, being women, to be forced to sell themselves, not for their own sake, not for their own gain, but for the gain and the sake of somebody else.
And in the years, there has been an evolution in the mechanisms of human trafficking for sexual exploitation. In the beginning, Sister Eugenia explained, the girls used to be brought over in groups, under the guise of pilgrims, only to immediately have their documents taken away and end up on the streets. When authorities realised what was happening, visas for pilgrimages stopped being issued, and traffickers found other ways of getting the women across, like flying them first to other countries, or, as the majority do at this moment in history, getting them to walk across the desert and sail the sea, with great risk to their lives. All this, of course, with the promise of a good job and extra money to be able to send home.
The biggest group that we have in Italy, it is from Nigeria, 59%. At the moment, we have between 50, 70, even we can go even as far as 100,000 women, immigrant women working on the streets.
And the fact that they are all illegal makes it very difficult to get exact figures and to have a clear picture of their situation. What we do know, says Sister Bonetti, is that the organisations behind the phenomenon know exactly how to go about it.
There is a well-organised organisation. They know how to move because there is a lot of people earning from these women, getting money. There is a lot of corruption at all levels, airport, embassies, immigration offices, taxi driver, people renting houses where these people can stay. There is a strong chain. And the chain has many links, many rings, and all these links have names. And among these names, there are also victims, and their poverty. There are also clients with their frustration, with their wealth, that they can do anything they want with the money at the expenses of these women who are really treated like rags. They are used and thrown away, used and thrown away.
Much of Sister Eugenia's work is connecting and communicating with the different links in that chain. She told me that she has just been to Libya, which is where most of the girls who cross the desert stay before undertaking the final leg of their journey.
Because for us as sisters working in this field, it is very important to work in connection with all the organizations that are dealing, they are concerned for this. And we are women and want to be women for women. And we are working also with sisters in different countries of origin in order to link countries of origin, transit and destination. Libya is one of the countries of transit. Origin, we are already very well established with the sisters in Nigeria. And they are working with us, prevention, reintegration, when we send back girls who want to go back to be with their own families and to get in contact with them once again. But we also needed to be in contact with the sisters and with the organization working on transit.
A transit, Sister Eugenia says, that too often is the last chapter in their lives.
Many, many of them die in the desert. And if they don't die in the desert, they can die as they cross
on
the boats. Now the sea has become the new cemeteries for thousands of migrants, women and men and children who tried for a better life, who tried to risk their life in order to give some help to their families. And this is what is happening to them.
Going back a bit, the reason religious sisters first got involved in helping the women who found themselves on the streets here in Italy is because, not knowing who to turn to, many of them knocked on the doors of the convents, and the sisters soon came to realise that society was facing a new crisis.
And some of the sisters who could really see that there was something very special, that we had to give attention to this new phenomenon, because nobody knew this phenomenon, because there was a great request. And that is why, you know, because there was the offering, you know, these poor women, they were taken and because they had no other opportunities for any better life because there was the request. So the traffickers used these two realities together. From one side, the push because of the poverty, and from the other side, the other push because of another request. Yes. And so now these two poverties, one was material poverty, and the other one is the poverty of values, of situation in life that join together. And now what we destroy? We destroy the life of these young people. We destroy the life of these women completely, but we destroy also the life of our own families. because even clients are slaves of another situation.
Slavery, says Sister Yevgenia, is the right word to use. These women are slaves, with shackles that are almost impossible to be rid of.
These women are asked by their madams, by the traffickers, in order to regain their freedom. They are asked nowadays to pay 60, 70, 80,000 euros. And now, in order to pay all this money, these women, they have to undergo not less than 4,000 sexual encounters with a man.
In the first years, it was the police who would bring the girls to the sisters. Today, the sisters' network extends throughout Italy with shelters and drop-in centres.
Now, at the moment, we have in Italy about 100 family homes, shelters,
across Italy,
run by sisters. All different congregations, 70, 75 congregations that have opened their congregations to the new challenge of today. And in their own houses, in their own buildings, where these girls could stay as long as it is needed. So now we started giving protection, training them, giving them lessons to acquire a profession, but also to learn the language. But there was a main big problem. We could not give legality.
So in 1997, the religious sisters, Caritas, and a few other organizations held a groundbreaking conference in Rome to which all women parliamentarians were invited.
We wanted them to hear what was happening on the street, because everybody could see them, but nobody was aware of what was really happening. And so now, from what the sisters Caritas could share with them, they realized that the problem was big. And at a certain moment we said, we have done our part, now it is up to you. We need a legal status for these women in order to regain them fully, to help them to regain their dignity, their freedom, because they are still vulnerable.
Soon afterwards, a law was passed, granting these victims of human trafficking the possibility of requesting a renewable 6-month work permit, allowing them to acquire an identity and the chance for emancipation. Today, Sister Eugenia says, we work in cooperation with the Nigerian embassy that grants many of the women new passports and the possibility of building a new life. And subsequent cooperative efforts with the US Embassy to the Holy See have seen further progress in prevention and preparation, including training courses for religious sisters involved in this very particular work. But, she says, there is much still to be done, especially in raising awareness and sensitivity on the side of our well-to-do society.
Because you simply have money and you think that with your money you can buy even a body of a minor or the poverty of a woman, because each one of us have been created with the same dignity. So nobody has the right to buy the dignity of another person. It's something that is so great, so important. So now we have to make people to understand, and to start also from with young people, to realize and to appreciate relationship, respect for one another, for their own selves, for their own life, and also for the life of other people. Because each one of us have been created in the image of God, and no one has the right to treat another human being as a slave.
And now Father Jim Brand reflects on the deep spirituality of the AA's 12th Step program.
Hello, it's Father Jim. One of the areas of spirituality that has touched me enormously is the 12th Step program. I mentioned before my father was an alcoholic. I'm not myself, but a family that's had alcoholism in it is always affected. And there are various groups for the sons and daughters of alcoholics. Because in an alcoholic home, nothing really seems to be what it is. We gave the impression, as a family, that we were the funniest, brightest, happiest family in the world. Got on well with everyone, cracked jokes, We were the life and soul of all the parties, but behind our front door, there was a deadly secret. We could never invite friends home because we never knew in what condition my father would be. When he was good, he was very, very good, and when he was bad, he was horrid. And as children, we used to sit on the stairs waiting for him to come back from his club after his work. And we'd be nervously, teeth chattering, waiting for that key to go into the lock. And immediately we knew what sort of an evening it was going to be. Heaven or hell. And my father used to sit in one room reading, his nose in a book, being antisocial and getting drunker, while my mother was in the kitchen being Martha, couldn't sit down. And I was the go-between. I was three younger sisters. I was always the go-between, trying to keep them in some sort of contact, my parents. Now, a go-between is a shuttle. You go to one, then you go to the other, then you go back to the other one. And if a plane is on a shuttle service, it doesn't stay long at any one destination before it's all aboard and back again. So it's quite tiring being a shuttle. Also, it's very lonely, because if you're travelling at 2,000 or 5,000 feet, it's very hard for anyone to be on the same phase, at the same height, accompanying you. So I had the most wonderful interior fantasy world when I was very young. You know, there were goblins and elves in the woods, and an amazing imagination. I once had to intervene when my father went after my mother with a carving knife. That's a rather difficult memory at the age of 12. But it did mean that we got caught up in what is a basic dishonesty in alcoholism, and really in all compulsive problems and sicknesses people have. Before Christmas, a van would come when my father was out at work with the booze for Christmas. I remember there were crates of whiskey, crates of gin, crates of sherry. And one year, I think I was 13, I told the van driver, "I'm sorry, he doesn't live here anymore." And the van driver went off. Of course, huge row the next day, why hadn't it arrived? Well, that was rather dishonest of me. And then occasionally I'd drop a bottle, accidentally on purpose. Does that mean one bottle less for him to drink? Well, you couldn't win, you just bought another. So there was a lack of honesty in the house with each other, and we were terrified of saying the truth because we'd be contradicted, or it would be another excuse for him to drink. Well, when I was ordained, I, for obvious reasons, found it very hard to help people who were drinking because it kicked up too much stuff in me. Instead of listening to the person, I suppose I'd be thinking, "Oh, I think of your poor wife and children, what are they going through?" Until one day, a man came to see me who had been a real wino, a very angry man. And he had seen two men going into the basement of a church. He'd been sleeping out rough in cemeteries in London. In winter, he found a greenhouse. Well, he followed these two men in, thinking they were going for a handout. And when he got in, he found he was in a big room, about 30 or 40 people, drinking tea. Tea, if you please. So he sat there muttering about, "Oh, God, these do-gooders, tea, how wet. I want booze. Any money? No money here. Oh." Anyhow, he sat there in his dejection, and one of the group stood up to give their story. And he heard himself, because there is an amazing way that an alcoholic alone can be understood well by an alcoholic. Well, he came to see me and was received into the church, and he introduced me to the whole world of the 12th Step program, which I find one of the most deeply spiritual programs in the world. Not just for those with compulsions and illnesses, like alcoholism or drugs, but for sanity. And since then, I used to give weekends on the 12 Steps to various groups. They're one of the happiest weekends I've ever spent with people. In the parish I was in, we had a lovely room. We opened it up for a meeting once a week for Alcoholics Anonymous. It was an open meeting, so I could go. And for me, it was my weekly spiritual refreshment. And I soon learned that there are four things about this programme and the people I've met that have a lot to teach the church. The first of these four things is this. One, we are all in this together. Alone it is impossible, but together, supporting and understanding each other, we can make it. So even if you've got drink inside you, go straight back to the meeting where you'll be welcomed. And I was amazed how people still suffering, still drinking, were welcomed firmly, but were with enormous love, because everyone understood. Secondly, don't look back. It's full of regrets and pain. Our Lord doesn't want us to look back. When the Jews left Egypt, they kept looking back, thinking of the melons and the pomegranates and the leeks and the belly dancers and the pyramids. So they went wandering around in circles. If a ploughman keeps looking back, he goes all over the place. In fact, the Jews only did the hokey-cokey in the desert for 40 years. They put their right foot in and they put their right foot out and turn about, because they kept looking back. So the first important point about the church and these wonderful groups is we are all in this together. Secondly, don't look back. Thirdly, just for today. This is the sacrament of the present moment. Don't start promising you're not going to drink for the next 40 years. Today, just today, a day at a time, is what they say. And in the spiritual life, that is very important. Not to start jumping jumps before we reach them. Not always looking back. But to be really present. And in prayer, it takes me a while to become really present to the present moment. As we all tend to be a bit dissipated. You know, one eyeball's looking one way, the other eyeball's looking the other way. One leg wants to go to France, the other leg wants to go to America, so we do the splits. One hand gives and the other hand takes. It takes a while to find inner composure and for our inner civil wars to find reconciliation. Because God is. Because God always is. He always was and he always will be, but for the moment, God is. My problem is, I want to be here and now rather than there and then. And I have found in these groups such prayer, such contemplation, such inner serenity, which is something they pray for all the time. So firstly, we are all in this together. Secondly, don't look back. Thirdly, the present moment, just for today. And fourthly, we are all one drink away from ruination. I have never ever heard anyone at an AA meeting condemn anyone else, because they're all so poor in spirit, because they're so vulnerable to their first drink. They've been there themselves. They've been to hell, back and forward, sometimes many, many times. Well, that's more than you can say about any group in the church, not condemning. Next week, I'll look at some of the 12 steps and show how amazingly spiritual they are for health of mind and body and soul. But I'll end for now with their favourite prayer. It's called the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Laudetur Jesus Christus.